This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:36 on the evening edition. You're with Kelvin and Hezril. And we're not looking at the Education Ministry's SOPs for the reopening of schools for children with special needs. And many parents and teachers have complained about this because those SOPs we're talking about, they basically don't exist, which means that for now, they've been forced to adopt SOPs for regular schools, but those measures are problematic.
Right, and to understand why, the Malaysian Insight talked to a few teachers. Hazimah Zakaria from Persatuan Kanak-Kanak Istimewa Bangi says it's difficult for special needs children to learn new routines. So some schools have had to adjust the SOPs to account for this. And for example, the changing the 1 meter physical distance rule to 6, and others will repeat classes to minimize the number of students in a classroom.
Right, but there's lots more that needs addressing. SOPs for hand washing, wearing masks, and reminders to avoid physical contact and more. And all of this stems from the fact that children with special needs require more attention and time to cope with changes than their peers.
And I think, it also has a huge impact on parents because apparently the education minister, Radzi Jidin, only announced the reopening of special needs schools 4 days in advance, and then for regular schools it was 2 weeks. So, you know, parents don't really need more time to process all of these SOPs, because when it comes to, I think, special needs children, it starts at home, right? You can't. Parents understandably are worried about letting their kids go, without at least, giving them some time to adapt. And I think that has to do with, you know, creating a safe environment for them and things that their peers don't need.
And giving the benefit of doubt to the government, perhaps the reason why there isn't an SOP yet, what they could be doing is really personalizing and tailoring each and every SOP for a special needs schools to what they need, right? You know, perhaps for one that serves specifically children who may have autism, for example, they may have different SOPs there. Children perhaps with visual or auditory disabilities, there might be a different set of SOPs, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, for, say, those with issues with sight, for example, the sense of touch is very important, right? You learn Braille, for example, or perhaps to get around, you do need to touch surfaces and so on. So there is a certain set of criteria, certain set of guidelines that you might need there. Or perhaps those with hearing issues, you know, masks where they usually conceal the mouth, you know, lip reading becomes more difficult, you know, although in some instances, in some special, there are special masks available for that, right? They have a clear space where the mouth is supposed to be, so you can do that. And those are usually served for children or people with hearing disabilities. So given, I'm trying to give the government benefit of doubt, maybe as to why they're taking some time to come up with those SOPs, is that they just are trying to personalize it.
Yeah, but I think, I guess it would depend on the school, but I would assume that if there are, if they divide the classes by age groups, right, then teachers will clearly have to address different needs at the same time. And so I think some of the urgency could have to do with those concerns and those needs and trying to get around them instead of separating kids by perhaps disabilities, which hypothetically could make their jobs easier. But then it goes back to, you know, maybe their syllabus needs and, you know, how all these things play are taken into account.
Exactly. And on that note, it's also about neurodiversity, right? You know, how do you cater for different issues, different needs, different requirements? You know, for example, if we're talking about, say, autism, I was speaking to a friend who works as a therapist, and he says that, you know, for high functioning kids, their needs might be different. You know, they could be better at understanding and learning and getting used to the SOPs, say hand washing or wearing masks, but for there are different challenges associated for those who might be lower functioning, right? So, you know, it's trying to really understand and get to the nitty gritty, and that's where the key is. And you want to be able to protect people, you want to be able to protect these kids, right? You can let us know how are you dealing with the SOPs if you have children with special needs. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Felina Faisal, chairperson of the National Autism Society. Keep it here for that conversation. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:43. You are listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin and Hezril, and we're talking about the lack of SOPs for the reopening of schools for children with special needs. We're now crossing over to Felina Faisal, chairperson of the National Autism Society, or NASOM. Felina, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Hi there. Thank you for calling me.
Could you help us understand the SOPs that special needs schools need to follow at the moment?
At the moment, the special needs SOP is not really much different from SOPs in schools, where social distancing is still the topmost priority. But the biggest difference of these is the declaration from the parents. A special declaration is given out to parents for all those in the household. Mm-hmm. Meaning the parents have to say which one of them have traveled, their temperature, and the children at home.
And what are some of the specific challenges you've come across in implementing these SOPs?
I think the biggest problem is in the children itself. If you would understand, because I run centers for autism, children with autism, from the ages of 3.5 to 40. So when they come back to school, as they call it school, they think it's back to normal. And for them, change is very difficult. Mm. Routine is what they thrive on. And as soon as we start changing and tweaking things around, it'll be difficult.
Right. And, you know, just on that note, how have the students and parents coped with these changes, as well as the teachers, actually?
At the moment, what we're doing is we're doing special kits for each child, because each autistic child learn on their own pace. So each child has got their actual education plan. So what the teachers have done is to put things aside for each and every one of them so that they could learn at home. But of course, that doesn't really work because they need the teachers around. So in actual fact, our schools are just starting to open only July the 13th.
The education minister has said that more specific SOPs for special needs schools will be released at a later time. We know when they'll be released, and are you involved in discussions with the ministry?
At the moment, I am actually involved in setting up SOPs for autism centres together with the Jabatan Kebajikan Masyarakat, because we are under them, you see. So what happens is actually where it's going to be slightly different is there will be a special lane for the parents to send these kids into school. So the parents would actually have to send the kids into the classrooms itself, because the parents, as I said, the declaration of the parents' temperature is important. So if the child has a temperature, the child will not be allowed in the class. And if the parents have a temperature, the child will also not be allowed in the class. So that's where it's slightly different, whereas school is just the child going into school and the child's temperature taken. But where special needs children, be both parent or the person who sends the child, both temperatures will be taken.
Right. And, you know, given that you are in discussions with the government, you know, what has their mindset, their optics and the perception been so far with regards to what's happening on the ground? Is it, you know, connected enough? Is it linked and properly done enough when it comes to supporting the needs of special needs children at this point?
I think the government is doing as much as they can, because each child, each special need is slightly different to the other. But what they want not to ever happen is to have a viral infection or a cluster among these kids. These kids are already so confused, they don't understand what's happening. Can you imagine if they were to ever get one of these? So government is doing everything they can to not have any more infection among these kids.
Now, what would you propose to improve the SOPs for special needs schools?
So what it is the social distancing.
Hmm.
You have to lessen the amount of kids in the school. So in normal classes, they've cut it down to 17. For special needs, they're cutting it down to 7.
Yeah, and I guess this would also come with additional challenges, right? Seeing that right now there is a routine and schedule change, which some kids might find difficult. And then later on, if things were to go back to normal, that's another change altogether. How, I guess, are parents, are teachers anticipating and preparing for this change?
I mean, I think the fact that we are practicing not touching, maybe in a way it's good. Cleanliness, as in washing hands, sanitizing hands, which is good. You know, these are the things which is easier to teach the kids. What's going to be difficult is to put on the mask.
Hmm.
I mean, my son's autistic and he refuses to put on mask. But what I said is, you don't put on mask, you're not going to McDonald's. So things like that, you know. She would reluctantly wear, but it's difficult.
Hmm. Now, separately, how have these schools coped in terms of access to financial resources? Is there any assistance from the government?
So far for us, for the NGOs, we managed to get a one-time cash for cleaning, to clean up the house, the schools. So, which actually helps us because, you know, with the new SOP, you actually have to clean the classroom twice a day, and that will actually take a lot of money. The difficulty really is maintaining the fees when the kids are not coming to school, because a lot of parents say, what's the point of paying when the kids don't come to school? But then we still have to pay the teachers. The teacher salaries still move. So, as you know, a lot of NGOs rely on fundraising, and fundraising has been zero.
And looking abroad, you know, what are some best practices that have worked well and when it comes to special needs education during the pandemic?
You see, people in Malaysia have been quite, I would say, spoiled, because a lot of the schools take in the kids from morning to evening. More places overseas, they do a lot of teacher-parent, teacher-kid, teacher-parent and kid, kind of like a therapy, you see. So what happens, the difference is parents will still work with the kids, even during the pandemic, through computers, laptops, internet, and so on and so forth. The biggest difference here is a lot of the kids, I mean, we're talking about parents below a certain financial position. You know, they might not even have laptops or handphones, and it's very difficult for them to work with a child because it's difficult for them to understand how the teacher works with a child. So that, I would think, our greatest challenge is there. People with better internet access, financial know-how, internet savvy, they are quite okay with the kids, as in overseas, because there is so much and so many things on the net that you can work with your child.
Right, and so what kind of approaches and, I guess, solutions moving forward are needed to address this barrier? Will it depend on government, or are there alternative ways?
It depends basically on the teachers, on how hardworking the teachers are. If the teachers can do an education plan for each and every child and put aside a little homework for each and every child, then the parents could actually work out with the child. Do you know what I mean?
Right. And as a final note, Felina, you mentioned financial constraints earlier. Where is the government hopping in on this? And, you know, additionally, how can individuals support and contribute to the cause?
I think the biggest challenge for individuals to help out is, if you know every single OKU, or should I say disability NGO, like for instance NASOM, MAB for the Blind, Cheshire Homes, all these really need help from the public. Most of their finances, I would say, like for instance, Nasum, we rely 75% on the public. And we do have friends who help us out. But every function that was possibly to ever happen didn't happen because of the MCO. So fundraising has been really, really difficult. Just reach across. You know, if you want to help the blind, the autism, the cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, every one of them need help. So if you could, if I could reach out to the public, if you have a little bit, just go to these societies. They do need money.
Felina, thank you very much again for speaking with us.
Okay, you're welcome.
That was Felina Faisal, chairperson of the National Autism Society, or NASOM. Again, if you have any thoughts about this story, you know, if you're if you have experience and if you have kids with special needs, you can tell us how the experience has been for you. You can call us 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we have some music. It's the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.